Above the wheel of the world, the gods played on. They sometimes forgot what happened if you let a pawn get all the way up the board. It took a little longer for the rumour to spread around the city, but in twos and threes the leaders of the great guilds hurried into the university. Then the ambassadors picked up the news. Around the city, the big semaphore towers faltered in their endless task of exporting market prices to the world, sent the signal to clear the line for high-priority emergency traffic, and then clacked the little packets of doom to chancelleries and castles across the continent. They were in code, of course. If you have news about the end of the world, you don't want everyone to know. Lord Vetinari stared along the table. "If I may recap, then, ladies and gentlemen," he said as the hubbub died away, "according to the authorities in Hong Kong, the capital of the Agatian Empire, the Emperor Genghis Cohen, formerly known to the world as Cohen the Barbarian, is well en route to the home of the gods with a device of considerable destructive power and the intention, apparently, of, in his words, returning what was stolen. And in short, they ask us to stop him." "Why us?" said Mr. Boggis, head of the Thieves' Guild. "He's not our emperor." "I understand the Agatian government believes us to be capable of anything," said Lord Vetinari. "We have zip, zing, vim, and a go-getting can-do attitude."
"Can-do what?"
Lord Vetinari shrugged. "In this case, save the world."
"But we'll have to save it for everyone, right?"
said Mr. Boggis.
"Even foreigners?"
"Well, yes. You cannot just save the bits you like," said Lord Vetinari. "But the thing about saving the world, gentlemen and ladies, is that it inevitably includes whatever you happen to be standing on. So let us move forward. Can magic help us, Arch-Chancellor?"
"No, nothing magical can get within 100 miles of the mountains," said the Arch-Chancellor.
"Why not?"
"For the same reason you can't sail a boat into a hurricane. There's just too much magic. It overloads anything magical. A magic carpet would unravel in mid-air."
Or turn into broccoli," said the Dean, "or a small volume of poetry."
"Are you saying that we cannot get there in time?"
Well, yes, exactly. Of course, they're already near the base of the mountain."
And heroes,
said Mr. Betteridge of the Guild of Historians. "And that means exactly," said the patrician, sighing,
Good at doing what they want to do.
"But they are also, as I understand it, very old men."
Very old heroes," the historian corrected him. "That just means they've had a lot of experience in doing what they want to do."
Lord Vetinari sighed again. He did not like to live in a world of heroes. You had civilization such as it was, and you had heroes. "What exactly has Cohen the Barbarian done that is heroic?" he said. "I seek only to understand."
"Well, you know their heroic deeds."
"And they are?"
"Fighting monsters, defeating tyrants, stealing rare treasures, rescuing maidens, that sort of thing," said Mr. Betteridge vaguely. "You know, heroic things."
"And who precisely defines the monstrousness of the monsters and the tyranny of the tyrants?" said Lord Vetinari, his voice suddenly like a scalpel, not vicious like a sword, but probing its edge into vulnerable places. Mr. Betteridge shifted uneasily.
"Well, the hero, I suppose."
"Ah, and the theft of these rare items? I think the word that interests me here is the term theft, an activity frowned on by most of the world's major religions, is it not? The feeling stealing over me is that all these terms are defined by the hero. You could say, I am a hero, so when I kill you, that makes you de facto the kind of person suitable to be killed by a hero. You could say that a hero, in short,